Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 symptom support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org. We're also supported by Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what today's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, slow steps toward a brighter future. The signs of optimism are unmistakable now. COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are down. Doses of the newest vaccine are pouring into the state. The governor is easing restrictions, and newly vaccinated seniors are going on spring break. Looking even further ahead, there's a chance future coronavirus pandemics could be headed off with a pill, a potentially amazing scientific accomplishment in a year filled with them.
My name is Lisa Grilinski, and I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Epidemiology here at UNC.
Grilinski is one of the scientists who has worked on EIDD-2801, an oral treatment for early COVID infection, now in clinical trials. It could greatly reduce the chances for another future coronavirus pandemic. But we'll get to that in a minute. Before we do, Grilinski has a message. This pandemic is not over yet.
I'm definitely nervous to see how the next couple of weeks go. You know, easing the curfew, I didn't feel like that was a big deal to begin with. I have no problem with that going away. Opening bars makes me honestly pretty nervous. So I want to see how our rates go, and hopefully people won't be afraid to say, actually, these need to close to allow other segments of our society to reopen. If we had a choice between opening schools and having people feel comfortable sending their kids to in-person learning versus opening bars, I don't even have kids, but I can easily say that schools would be my priority. So mixed feelings right now, nervous, hopeful that things go well, but not fully confident.
You know, a lot of the stories and things we're seeing right now are kind of pinned to this 1 year anniversary of the pandemic. Obviously, for you, it's probably a lot longer than that when you sort of got specifically focused on this. But I am wondering, kind of a year or so ago, when this really started to, we all started to understand what this was going to be maybe a little bit more. What was going through your mind, and what's your last year been like?
2020 was definitely the worst year ever. You know, work-life balance was completely non-existent. Also, I never had so many things trying to pull me away from work. You know, we've been very much in the mix of everything here in UNC with developing models in, you know, primary human cells, in animals, and testing vaccines, testing drugs, trying to learn about this virus, how it infects people, how it makes them sick, how we can treat them, how we can prevent infection from ever happening. So, you know, I think my latest hours at work in person here in lab was 3 a.m. one night last year. And it's not because I got in at 1 a.m. for a time point. We've all worked really hard. You know, we're fighting burnout constantly, I would say.
Obviously, you're very focused on the work there in the lab, but I'm sure you pay very close attention to vaccine logistics and when they become available and all of these things. And I'm just really curious at sort of about short-term, mid-term, what you see happening here in our society. I mean, do you feel like we're looking at a couple of months before things return to some sense of normal? Or are you feeling it's going to be a little bit longer than that?
Personally, I feel like it's going to be a little bit longer. And some of that's very much skewed by, you know, my situation. I've been vaccinated. We were prioritized since we work with the virus and, you know, high titer in the lab constantly. So we were lucky enough to be in those very early waves. My husband has not been vaccinated, so we're not going anywhere because we're not interested in getting him sick. You know, my mom lives in Massachusetts. She just got her first dose a couple of days ago. I'm incredibly excited, but, you know, she's not protected yet. Her friends in a similar age group are just starting to get their first doses. So it's going to be a while, and especially for people who, you know, are younger and don't have medical or, you know, critical worker jobs, it's going to be several months at least before people start getting doses and before they've had both doses, if it's a two-dose vaccine that they're getting, and there's time for immunity to build. So we're at this kind of critical inflection point, I think, where cases are coming down and vaccine numbers are starting to be real, but we're not there yet.
Is one of the reasons that it might be a little bit longer something having to do with the variants, the SARS-CoV-2 variants that many people are very worried about? What's your impression of that?
So the variants maybe complicate things a little bit. They're certainly not great news. They're something we want to keep an eye on. And if the virus drifts a little bit further, that could become very concerning, where kind of a booster that we've heard Moderna and Pfizer talk about that's more specifically targeted to newer variants could be important. But for me, the issue is, you know, we kind of have in sight a projection of when we might reach herd immunity in the US. Now, that's very dependent on enough people deciding they are willing to take these vaccines, because if we have a good sized block that is resistant to vaccination, or is just very difficult to reach logistically, you know, that can make a big difference in terms of how good a job we can do in stamping out virus in this country. But, you know, there are a lot of countries in the world that have received no vaccines yet. And this past pandemic year, I think, has shown us incredibly well that the world is very interconnected and viruses don't respect borders. And, you know, personally, I'm excited to travel again once the world opens up a little bit, but I need to think about where I'm going and being responsible with that and what I might bring back to the US and what I might accidentally bring wherever I go. So the world is not going to be the same as we remember it a year and a half ago.
So because of that and other reasons, you know, therapies are going to be really important moving forward. And one of the things that you've worked on there that seems really promising is the oral treatment, the pill, that could become available. It's going through, I think, some trials right now. Describe what that is and what kind of impact it would have on therapies moving forward.
Sure. So this is a direct acting antiviral. It's you take it orally. So we treated the mice orally when we did experiments in the lab. It's being tested in clinical trials as an outpatient because you can take it as a pill. You don't need to go get an IV or go to an infusion center or something. So we think that's really, really helpful for access and for speedy delivery. Basically, it mimics some of the nucleotides that are incorporated in the virus genome, and it stops the virus from being able to replicate its genome. So that's how it works. You know, safety concerns, testing for efficacy, all of that is happening right now. So they're doing, I think, a combined phase 2-3 clinical trial, and hopefully we'll get readouts pretty quickly. But the hope is that, you know, pretty quickly after diagnosis, someone could be shipped pills to their house, because they're obviously not going to a pharmacy if they've been diagnosed with COVID-19, and, you know, take these, drop their virus load, you know, have them recover more quickly, and hopefully stop them from any possible transmission that might happen to people around them as well.
And that seems really important, obviously, because it would keep people out of hospitals. But it also seems to be moving forward in conjunction with better testing, which also would be really important if you, because you need to find out somebody has the virus, they could take this. Also, could it potentially work with other coronaviruses that might emerge in the future?
Yes, the way this works, it doesn't target, you know, the spike protein, which we hear about all the time with antibodies and the vaccines, and that's what's varying a little bit in these new variants popping up around the world. This targets one of the critical replication proteins, and so it's incredibly conserved amongst coronaviruses. So in the lab, we've shown that it works against original SARS, it works against MERS, it works against related bat viruses, it is really broad spectrum coronavirus antiviral, and it actually works for some other viruses as well.
As a layperson, I have to say this sounds really great. I mean, it sounds like it's the kind of thing that could make a huge difference moving forward, not just in sort of obviously the therapies and treating of people, but just in the sense of not having to worry about a pandemic like this becoming a thing in the future. Do you allow yourself to have that kind of optimism about it?
Yes, not. We're scientists, so we're always seeing the caveats and, you know, the things that might make things more complicated, just because that's in the training and we don't want to get ahead of ourselves too much. But we think it's really important to kind of have these pan coronavirus, maybe even broader pan virus, kind of on the shelf, treatments that would be ready to go in the case of the next emerging virus, be it a coronavirus or something else. As you kind of noted, the most important part about this drug is getting a diagnosis and getting that early enough to act. So all of these direct-acting antivirals, be it a remdesivir, which we've heard about, a monoclonal antibody, you need to get them to people early because after a while, it's not really virus replication that's your problem. It's the host immune response. And that's where your dexamethasone and other treatments like that come in more. If you've gotten to that point, an antiviral is not going to cure you. So testing and having that whole infrastructure set up is really key.
I've spoken to researchers and then other epidemiologists and everything, and you know, people who've worked directly on the vaccine. And I have to just say, like, once we get through this and once we get to some sense of normal, maybe it's a year, maybe it's down the road. When we look back to the work that y'all have done, it just seems like it's going to be kind of one of history's most remarkable scientific feats that we were able to get a vaccine, we were able to get it out, that if this pill is able to sort of get into the marketplace and work and we're able to get testing.
Yeah, it's actually thinking about the timeline this morning, it's even more remarkable than I'd fully appreciated before. You know, I think it was January 8th when we learned officially that it was a coronavirus causing these pneumonia cases in Wuhan. And I got my first dose of vaccine December 28th. So less than a year, other people in the lab tested the Moderna vaccine in mice, you know, in our lab. We were lucky enough to be a part of that whole collaboration with the VRC and NIH and to see kind of intimately the knowledge that was required to be able to make these scientific leaps. You know, we went from a sequence to animal testing to people to a vaccine that's available for, well, kind of the masses in this country. We're still working on, you know, distribution everywhere just because it takes time to produce vaccine, but it's incredible.
When do you think you'll feel comfortable eating inside a restaurant?
Oh, I think that's going to be one of the last things I feel comfortable with, actually, just because, you know, I want it to be a really relaxing, enjoyable time. I want to know that not only have I been vaccinated and all members of, you know, whatever party I'm eating with, because it would be amazing to do that with friends as well as my husband, but, you know, the servers, that everyone else in the restaurant is protected. So I'm a huge fan of takeout right now. I love food. Food is something that encourages me to travel around the world. And so missing out on those two things right now, you know, it would be fantastic to relax and enjoy life that way, but it's going to be a while before I eat in a restaurant again. Patio dining, spring's coming.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Charlie Shelton Ormond and Rebecca Martinez produced this episode. Amanda Magnus was the editor. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.